This webcast is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Steinway & Sons is a proud sponsor of the ASCAP Deems Taylor Virgil Thompson broadcast award-winning program Between the Keys, featuring Jed Distler. More information about Steinway & Sons, makers of handcrafted pianos since 1853, is available at www.steinway.com. What a dynamic way to begin a program. That was pianist Sarah Cahill performing a classic early 20th century piano piece, The Study in Mixed Accents by Ruth Crawford, who is just one of the many pioneering 20th century American composers that Sarah Cahill has championed over the course of her highly distinctive career. My name is Jed Distler. I'm the artist in residence for the Classical Network, and this week's edition of Between the Keys showcases the artistry of Sarah Cahill. She is a pianist based in Berkeley, California. She has long championed important American innovators like Ruth Crawford, Henry Cowell, Leo Orenstein, Mark Blitzstein, Lou Harrison, Joanna Baez, and Terry Riley, among many, many others. She has recorded extensively on labels such as New Albion, Other Minds, Cold Blue, and most recently, she released a 4-CD set called 80 Trips Around the Sun. It contains music both composed by Terry Riley and composed in tribute to Terry Riley. Sarah Cahill also is the longtime host of Revolutions Per Minute, which is a weekly program heard on the KALW public radio network in San Francisco. In fact, she recently had me on as a guest when I was in San Francisco a few weeks back. And in turn, I interviewed Sarah during her most recent visit to New York, and we're going to get to that conversation momentarily. But first, let's have some more music. We're going to hear Noctuelle, which is the opening movement of Maurice Ravel's piano suite, Miroir. Sarah Cahill at the piano. music of Maurice Ravel, Noctuel, from the piano suite Miroir, and that features our guest this hour, Sarah Cahill, at the piano. Why don't we go to my interview with Sarah that was recorded especially for this episode, and to be honest, I'm not sure if it's so much an interview as it is a conversation between two old friends and colleagues. I hope you enjoy it. Sarah, I am so happy you're here. Welcome.
It's wonderful to see you, Jed.
It's
such
great.
A privilege to be on your radio show. I've been an admirer for a very long time.
Well, thank you so much. Well, likewise, I have been on your radio show.
Yes.
I've been on both of your radio shows, in fact.
In Berkeley and in San Francisco.
That's right.
Yeah, KBFA and KALW.
What got you into playing or interested in new music?
Wow, that's quite a question. it was a couple of different things. I was trained, like we all are, to play classical music and do...
To play dead male Austrians.
Exactly, exactly. And so I studied with Sharon Mann when I was little, and then I do a concerto every year, like... You know, Haydn when I was 12, and with an orchestra, and then the Bach D minor concerto when I was 13, and then the Beethoven first when I was 15, and I play certain repertoire. So it was always classical music, and then when I was 17, John Adams wrote China Gates for me, and that was 40 years ago. So that was one thing, but another thing was that I kept playing classical music, and then I went to the Clara Haskell competition, and I was eliminated in the preliminaries, and I had spent a year and a half working towards that moment. The preliminaries, there was a Bach Prelude and Fugue, a Brahms Intermezzo, and a Scarlatti Sonata, and they cut me off, and it was one of those situations where the judges are like way, way, way in the distance. I mean, they see miles away, and they're in the dark, and it's the scariest thing, and there was a guy there who was really... the sort of arrogant young man who was competing, and he was making fun of the pieces I was playing, and he was like, you're playing that Bach Prelude and Fugue? And he actually threw up on the way up to the stage because it was so scary. But I was eliminated in the preliminaries, and John and I, we were going to be married, and so we went all the way to Vevey, Switzerland, and we left Vevey, Switzerland, and I was just thrown into this kind of crisis of, what am I doing? Like, playing classical music, what does it mean? And meanwhile, I had been writing for alternative weeklies and meeting composers that way, writing about new music. I met Larry Polansky, who was a great mentor,
yeah.
And also Charles Amerkanian, who was a great mentor in terms of introducing me to a lot of...
Did Charles get you into the radio
business?
Yes,
so Charles gave me a radio show and
at KPFA.
KPFA in 1989. So the first program I did was original recordings of Stravinsky and, that great first recording of The Rite of Spring. And
oh, yes.
My father had the 78s of the first L'Histoire du Soldat, which hadn't been released, I think, on CD. So I brought in the old 78s, and that's such a funny recording because they can't really manage the rhythms, and it's a good example of how in those days, I mean, Stravinsky's rhythm, like da-da-dun, da-da-dun, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, it was just so foreign that they have trouble even doing that.
Well, what you're saying leads me to another question about when you're playing old music by Mozart, Beethoven, Brahms, Debussy, etc., etc., there is a kind of performing tradition in terms of recordings and lineage, whereas with new music, you don't quite have that.
Right.
And what you were just saying about the Stravinsky is a case in point, because when Stravinsky was going into the recording studio with these musicians when L'Histoire du Soldat was just kind of hot off the griddle, so to speak, nobody quite knew how it sounded like. You couldn't just go out and buy a digital download.
Right, right. And
how do you create a tradition then?
Because
you're commissioning a lot of young composers. You've premiered so many pieces. And so when you have to create this tradition or play a piece, how do you go about making sense of it?
Well, definitely communicating with the composer. And that's what's so great, as you know, about working with living composers. I mean, indeed, that you can call up, maybe not call up Frederick Shevsky, but at least sort of communicate with him and say, what do you mean by this?
Oh, you
and,
can call him up.
Or, well, yeah, but it's...
But he's listed in the Brussels phone book.
But I mean, when he has something like knock on the piano, you know, where on the piano do you knock and what do you, and all those things, like what sound are you really looking for when there's some sort of effect in the score? But getting back to older music, it becomes, when you're used to playing new music and working with living composers, it becomes very frustrating when you have questions about older music and you want to ask Schubert, why did you X out, why did you cross out those two pages, that section in the Drei Klavierstücke? If you put big X's through the score, does that mean we're not supposed to play them, or do we play that part, or do you leave it out because Schubert wanted it left out? Or there are a lot of really good questions. But I felt like as soon as I started playing new music and working with living composers, that everything fell into place in a way that the focus is then on the piece of music itself. And for me, that's such a great pleasure that the audience comes, you know, is listening to the new piece of music and is not listening to
the interpretation.
Right. And like, how am I starting that movement of, you know, Opus 109 by Beethoven or something like, and having heard it many, many times before. I love still playing classical music. So when the Alexander String Quartet says, let's do the Mozart piano quartets, and by the way, could you play the, you know, the Trout Quintet in this concert coming up? And I'm like, oh my God, of course. Yes, the Trout Quintet, of course. Or, you know, sometimes I go to this place, Mayville State University, which is halfway between Fargo and Grand Forks in North Dakota. And in that place, they don't have, you know, concert series. They haven't heard Murray Pariah and 10 other pianists do the exact same piece in the weeks before, and they're not sitting there saying, let's see how she pedals in that, you know, second movement or something. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the way we listen to other pianists, and we're so critical, and we forget sometimes we're just enjoying a Debussy prelude. I mean, we're not listening to it as a Debussy prelude. We're listening to that particular interpretation of a Debussy prelude. And I think with premieres, there isn't that incredible baggage when you play, and it's all about the new piece, which is the way it should be, instead of about the pianist, I think.
An interview with pianist Sarah Cahill, who is our featured guest this hour on Between the Keys, and we'll have some more conversation coming up. I mentioned Sarah's latest CD release a few moments ago. It's a beautifully produced box set consisting of four compact discs with music written in tribute to the composer Terry Riley, as well as piano works by Terry Riley, including one work that we are going to hear now that was commissioned for and premiered by Sarah Cahill. It's called Be Kind to One Another. Terry Riley calls this work a rag, although I don't think the ragtime sensibility kicks in right away. It comes in a little more toward the middle. Sarah actually recorded this piece, Be Kind to One Another, for her 2013 release on the Other Minds label called Sweeter Music, but Terry Riley revised the piece in the meantime, and Sarah re-recorded this work especially for this box set, and it's that revised version and Sarah's new recording which we will hear now. So let's go to Sarah Cahill playing music of Terry Riley. Thank you. music of Terry Riley, a work entitled Be Kind to One Another, composed in 2008 and revised in 2014, with our featured artist this hour, Sarah Cahill, at the piano. That's from her recent 4-CD box set called 80 Trips Around the Sun on the Irritable Hedgehog label. You are listening to Between the Keys, and my name is Jed Disler, artist in residence for the Classical Network. And our featured guest this hour is Sarah Cahill, one of the piano world's great champions of new music, as well as American pioneers. One pioneering composer that Sarah has especially championed is Henry Cowell, whose experiments with extended piano techniques back in the early 20th century foreshadowed many characteristics and trends and techniques that would figure in later 20th century avant-garde piano music. When Sarah was in New York recently, I spoke with her about Henry Cowell. So let's go back to our interview. How did you discover Henry Cowell's music originally?
Through Larry Polansky and Charles Amerikanian and the American experimentalists that they were so interested in and working on and researching and advocating for. I started playing Cowell's music and then met a man at Schirmer who was working at Schirmer at the time, and they had a whole other volume of Cowell's music that they were going to put out. Mm-hmm. There are two volumes of Henry Cowell music, and they had all this material. But I don't think it's still, I think it's still unreleased, that Schirmer is still sitting on all this piano music of Henry Cowell. So I started playing some of those pieces. And because he's from the Bay Area, and I live in the Bay Area, and I talked to people who had knew him. And then a couple years ago, I played a concert of his music in San Quentin, of the music he had written there. And that was a really, really moving.
Oh, wow.
It was a very moving experience. And it actually took a lot of work. It was about 2 years I was begging them to let me do a concert of Henry Cowell music. And it's hard to get into San Quentin. It's even harder to get out of San Quentin, but it's hard to...
Well, it's easy to get in if you break the law.
Yeah, it's hard to...
And it's also hard to get in when you're not Johnny Cash.
Yes, I know, I know. But my dream was to go there and play a concert of music that he wrote in San Quentin, because, you know, he was there for 4 years, 1936 to 1940. And while he was there, he kept writing music. He directed the band, he conducted an orchestra, he taught music lessons, he just wrote a lot of great music. Some of the pieces made a lot more sense somehow when I played them there. And it was very interesting because the man I was working with there said, don't tell the prisoners, like, don't offer the information about what he was there for, which involved, you know, a 17-year-old boy, which was consensual, and it, what difference does it make what people do? And it was just outrageous that he was ever in there in the mm-hmm. first place, let alone for 4 years. But he said, you know, don't go into detail, obviously. And what really was interesting was that the concert, I did two concerts, an afternoon concert and an evening concert, and the inmates... The questions they asked were, how does he notate the chord clusters? They were completely uninterested in why he was there. You know, they couldn't care less about what he was doing in San Quentin. They just wanted to see the scores. And they said, how does he notate those various techniques? And it was fascinating.
Probably because this is music that they hadn't heard before, and these kinds of techniques with chord clusters are not really common.
No. And there were three inmates that played that day, and like Cowell, they only have access to a piano maybe once a week for an hour or something. I mean, it's just when you think about how we have access to pianos and how we get to practice, and if we're deprived of that, you know, I mean, that wouldn't be the worst thing about being in prison, but it's one thing, certainly.
There's value in scarcity, unfortunately, and yeah. With so much available to us all the time and how everything is accessible 24/7.
One thing, when he was in prison, he did this, he started doing this elastic form because he was working with dance companies, and he would write in these sort of modules that you could switch them around and you could repeat sections. And so if the dance company wanted 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, they could rearrange these modules in different ways. And I think Boulez and Stockhausen stole so much from Henry Cowell, never gave him credit. I think he's just the revolutionary of the 20th century and just hasn't been given the credit he's due.
Thank you.
composition by Henry Cowell. That was called High Color, from his set of two movements. With our featured pianist this hour, Sarah Cahill. That comes from a live performance recorded at UC Berkeley in 1997, released on the New Albion label. One of Sarah Cahill's close associates is the composer and writer Kyle Gann, who has written several solo piano works for Sarah, including this selection from a release called Private Dances. This is a piece that is inspired by blues and ragtime, although the rhythms always seem to be a little bit off-kilter, and I think deliberately so, if I know Kyle Gann. This is a piece called Swinging, music of Kyle Gann, pianist Sarah Cahill. Music by Kyle Gann. That was a piece called Swinging, and it really does swing in a kind of off-kilter way. We heard it performed by Sarah Cahill, our featured pianist this hour on Between the Keys. Getting back to the interview that I did with Sarah, I asked her to speak about a remarkable set of short piano pieces that she recorded by the Japanese composer Mamoru Fujieda. Tell me about Mamoru Fujieda and how you got involved with this extraordinary cycle of piano pieces.
It was right around, I think, 1997, and I went to the Other Minds Festival. There was a pianist named Rei Imamura playing some of Mamoru Fujieda's works, and he was a featured composer at the Other Minds Festival that year. And David Lang was another featured composer, and sometime, I think intermission, we talked, and he said, you should play some of those pieces. And I ordered the scores, which from Japan were sort of expensive and had beautiful William Morris covers with intertwining vines and leaves, very beautiful. And I started playing them, and it was that feeling that you get when you're a pianist or a musician, when you connect instantly and it feels right and you feel like this is what I should be doing. And I started including them in concerts. And then several years later, out of the blue, Mamoru Fujieda wrote an email and said, would you come to Japan to play Pauline Oliveris, Lou Harrison, Terry Riley, you know, all the people that I love to play, and a lot of American music in a festival. And then he said, and then would you come a month later and play my music in the dining room of a Frank Lloyd Wright building in Tokyo on my old German upright tune to Werkmeister 3? And I was like, okay, yeah,
you don't
I'm
get
there.
Invited to do that every day.
No. So it was just amazing, because also I had been living, you know the feeling, Jed, when you're living with a particular piece or pieces of music, with a composer's work, day after day after day, hours and hours and hours a day, and you're thinking about it and it's going through your head and you're so immersed in it. And then when I flew to Japan and there was the actual embodiment of this composer who had written this music, I mean, the physical presence, it's kind of mysterious, I think, when you first meet someone and you've been living with their music and you think, oh, so this, it came out of this person. It's very, very, very interesting. And when we first started working on it, one of the things he said, I mean, he's very, for want of a better word, Japanese, you know, traditional Japanese, so that he doesn't want a lot of expression in his music. And I felt a little bit like a bull in a china shop because I was getting all expressive and emotional and stuff. And
very
he says,
interesting.
And he says, no, just the dynamic range should be very, very, you know, just from piano to, from PP to MP or something. That's all.
But then, of course, that could change in the context if you're playing in a hall where you need to project, because I think dynamics are relative. Like, for instance, I'm playing a Morton Feldman piece where the dynamic is piano all the way through, but you really need little levels of sound. It's like,
yes,
putting on makeup.
How would you know?
Well, in performance sometimes, or on television sometimes, things have to be highlighted or slightly exaggerated in order to project.
Yes, absolutely.
If you're playing in a church acoustic that is very live, you would adjust your tempos accordingly.
Your dynamics, yeah.
Your dynamics as well as tempos and touch, right, and all kinds of things. So,
right. And I also love getting back to Henry Cowell and Ruth Crawford. I mean, composers who have been somewhat neglected in the earlier part of the 20th century, like Mark Blitzstein. I just adore Mark Blitzstein, and it's really fabulous to play from his manuscripts, and I think he hasn't been given his due as a pianist and writer for piano.
Thank you.
music by Mamoru Fujieda from his cycle of 32 short piano pieces entitled Patterns of Plants. We heard the 21st Collection Pattern A, pianist Sarah Cahill. Another pioneering American composer from the 20th century's first half lived to be 108 years old, and Sarah Cahill actually got to meet him. I am speaking about Leo Ornstein, who was a pianist as well as a composer. Let's listen to what Sarah had to say about Leo Ornstein.
It was, let's see, the year 2000, I think, and I pitched a concert of George Antile to George Steele, who was then at the Miller Theater.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So
yeah.
I wrote to George Steele at the Miller Theater, and I said, could I play a concert for George Antile's 100th birthday? He wrote back and said, instead of playing just someone who is no longer living and 100, how about pairing it with someone who is sort of has certain relationships to him, but is older than 100, 107, and still living? So that was Leo Ornstein. And luckily, his son Severo Ornstein lives nearby in Woodside, California, and right by the Jurassic residency program. He's published all of his father's music. It's all available on leoornstein.net. You can download all the scores. It's like 1,600 pages of piano music, I think. And it was really a labor of love because Severo just put it all into music notation and made it available. So I started playing his music, and then I wrote to Severo, and I said, could I please go visit your father, Leo Ornstein, at his nursing home in Green Bay, Wisconsin? So I went to Green Bay, Wisconsin to visit Leo Ornstein, 107. I brought him a dozen red roses and talked to him. He told two stories over and over, and one was about his wife, Pauline. She was a Park Avenue debutante with three maids. I was a Lower East Side boy, penniless, but love is blind. And every day I beg the Lord to take me so I can be with my beloved Pauline. And the other story was about the cellist in the Philadelphia Orchestra. I forget his name, but Leo Ornstein, who was a small man, wrote a cello and piano sonata. And then he picked me up, and I can't remember the name of the cellist, principal cellist in the Philadelphia Orchestra at the time. He picked me up physically, and he held me in there, and he shook me, and he said, do you realize you've written the greatest cello sonata since Brahms? And so he would sort of go in circles, as sometimes older people do, of telling one story and then telling another story. But I showed him some of the scores from 1917 or something, and I showed him the notation. I said, do you do this with your fists? And he said, yes, the fists or the palms of the hands. So that was really great.
So you did
to hear it from Leo.
So you were able to get information from the 107-year-old composer.
Yes.
That's really extraordinary.
Yeah.
I want to ask you one question that I ask a lot of people this. If you could only meet one musician who you otherwise would not have been able to meet, who would that have been?
Mine would be a tie between Henry Cowell and Franz Schubert. Franz Schubert brings out all my maternal instincts. I want to nurture him and take care of him and just make him feel good and cook him a hot meal, give him money, you know, whatever he needs. I want to just make his life what it should have been. I want to take care of Franz Schubert. But Cowell also.
Sarah, thank you so much for coming. This was really such a treat to
learn so much
Jed. About your musical insights and your incredible adventures in new music.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be on your show.
We have been featuring pianist Sarah Cahill in both conversation and in music. Information about performances, recordings, and upcoming projects is available on her website, www.sarahcahill.com. That's SarahCahill.com. This is Jed Distler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and thank you so much for listening. Between the Keys is an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. So until next week at this time, I wish you well and be kind to one another.